we have one of the most
influential,
aggressive, smartest people up on the Hill.
Let's hope this isn't Todd on the line.
Oh my goodness! It's the one and only Senator John Braun. John, you there?
I'm here.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah.
We're trying to make up for last week.
Did you like the introduction?
That was very nice, very kind. Maybe a little too much, but
So tell us about what's going on up there. So cutoff's coming, right?
It is. It's in, week number six. Policy cutoff is this Friday afternoon. So the frenzy is to get any remaining good bills out of committee if we can by Friday, and any of the bad bills that are still in committee, hopefully keep them in committee so they don't move forward this session.
All right. So the one people want to know about is what's going to happen on the pursuit bill? Is it going to get out of the House or the Senate before cutoff? And is it exempt from cutoff?
So first of all, it's not exempt from cutoff. It's not related to the budget, so it's not exempt. Of course, as you know, there are some rules we could use to pull it even after cutoff, but the majority party, you know, they don't even want to bring it out of committee, so I'm sure they aren't going to support, provide the votes to bring it out after cutoff. Right now, in the Senate, Senator Monica Dinger remains firm in spite of significant push from a large portion of her caucus to hear the bill and bring it out of committee. Frankly, her and the leadership have failed to recognize the need and are holding on to not letting out of committee. In the House, it's a little different. I don't know all the details. Representative Rule's bill, which is exactly the same as Senator Lovick's bill over here and does go a long way to fix the problem, that's scheduled for exec tomorrow, but the rumor mill says they're still looking for a couple more Democratic votes. There are enough votes to get out of committee with Republican votes, but they're trying to bring a couple of Democrats along. So I don't know what's going to happen over there.
Wow.
That's where we stand. The other wild card is, what the Senate did move out of committee was a study bill. They just say, we're not going to deal with this issue. We're going to go study it for 2 years and then come back and work on it. That's, of course, the wrong approach. We can't let this go on for another 2 years. People are getting hurt.
But the lady's study that they used to cite anyways was flawed, right?
Yeah, that's an academic study. This is, they want to have the Criminal Justice Training Commission go off and study it for 2 years and bring a proposal and a model policy back to the legislature at the end of 2024.
Just raising crime until for a couple more years, eh?
That's right. Here's the wild card. We think, you know, they tried to write that bill so that it couldn't be amended. We think there may be a chance to amend it and say, okay, fine, we're good with studying it, but in the meantime, let's take the law back to what it was before 2021, and give police the ability to pursue based on reasonable suspicion, study that, and then come back to the legislature. So I think that there's some challenges there, as I'm sure you can appreciate, with scope and object of the bill, but I think we may have a path. At least we're pushing forward to try every option we can to get this changed.
I wanted him kind of to explain scope and object real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, sure. So the way it works, just, you know, as you deal with all the issues you deal in Olympia, just to keep things sane and orderly, when you present a bill, you have to say, this is what the bill is about. That's the scope of the bill. And by rules, and they're slightly different in the House and the Senate, but by the rules, you can't expand, you can't amend that bill during the process to go outside of that scope. So if they say it's about a study bill, you know, nominally the bill should remain about a study. We think, but that's an interpretation. And
right, not studying it is still about the study.
Perhaps. That's the idea. And in the House, it's even more strict, as I'm sure you know, Richard, is it's about the scope and the title. In the Senate, we don't worry about the title as much, but the House, the title matters a lot. So
right, you can amend titles in the Senate. We can't in the House, right?
That's right. By the rules, that we are a little bit different.
Okay.
And of course, House, they've had gone overboard where they have these titles that are, you know, a paragraph long just to make sure nobody can amend the bill during process. This is just a way, you know, this is the sad part. This is just a way of getting around the democratic process. They claim to be all for democracy, except when democracy isn't getting the result they want. And then they'll use rules like this to try to get around it.
Oh, my goodness. You know, John, I was witness to the result of the police pursuit bill last night on the way home from the airport. We got passed by two vehicles that were street racing on I-5. They went around us in the car. Both of them kind of lined up like they were getting ready to launch off the starting line. And then, boom, we were just getting in, going through Tumwater. And they went. And I tell you what, when they hit the gas, it was the loud. They obviously were souped up cars, whatever. But they hit the gas and they were gone, out of sight. And then all of a sudden, a state patrol looked like a maybe from the county or something, like went around me pretty fast, and he was going to catch him. Well, he finally caught up to him. I could see, turn on his lights, and then I saw both of the cars kind of just take off, and no one was pulled over on the side of the road up the road. There ended up being a car pulled over. I'm not sure if it was one of the racers, but there was only one. Another one got away, and because they have to cut off pursuit if it gets
dangerous,
right?
Well, yeah, I mean, and some of that's true before. I mean, we want law enforcement officers to keep themselves and the public safe, and they have to decide when it's safe and when it's not safe. What the law does, the current law does, is say you can't even try. Whether you don't even get any judgment, you just assume that it's unsafe, which means this is what we're seeing, and not necessarily all about street racing, but about pursuits, and in particular, when it comes to auto theft, there's no ability at all to chase someone. So you can steal a car literally right in front of the police and they have no ability to chase you. That's why, you know, criminals aren't dumb.
They're just young people out for a joyride, John. They don't mean harm.
Yeah. Well, they don't mean harm, perhaps. But
I'm being sarcastic.
I know what you're saying. Is when they have an accident, they you know, injure or kill someone.
But Senator Dingras, that's what one of the things she said, right? Is that these are young people and you're putting them in danger, but they're committing crimes.
Your point is exactly right. Is whether it's young folks just making, you know, bad decisions, or in more cases now it's hardened criminals who are just taking advantage of the law because they know law enforcement can't pursue under the current statute, and they're just, and we've seen auto thefts skyrocket. We've seen fleeing from police skyrocket. You know, it's 150% more folks, you know, evading police than we had 2 years ago.
That's crazy.
And the folks who don't want to change this refuse to acknowledge that.
John, if you could,
it claims it's saving lives from from bystanders, and I don't disagree. The idea that we want to say, you know, we don't want high speed chases in downtown, you know, Centralia or Chehalis is an example that are going to put, you know, bystanders at risk. Absolutely, but law enforcement already knows that. They make those decisions every day. They know how to evaluate whether it's safe to pursue. Is the risk of pursuing greater than the risk of not pursuing? I trust them to make that decision. They're trained to make that decision. And what this law does is say, nope, they don't get to make the decision. We're just going to give the criminals a pass. We got to get back to some level of sanity on this thing.
Yeah, we have to give them the decision-making authority back. I mean, it goes back. We just have to uncuff our police and law enforcement agencies. I mean, I talked about this a while back, and, you know, it's just ridiculous that people that aren't in this profession start telling them what they can and can't do overbearingly, right? There has to be rules. I get that.
So, John, to me, though, there's two stupid bills that go along with this. The right turn on red bill to ban right turns on red, and the 0.05, because basically we're creating more laws we're not going to enforce.
That's right. I think, I'm not sure the right turn on red makes it through, because I think people realize how silly this is to do exactly what you're saying. Let's make more rules we won't enforce. 0.05, I'm not sure. Because I think
I don't know what 0.05 is.
Well, this is just lowering the.
Oh yeah, okay, got you.
DUI down to 0.05. On first blush, everybody says, "Well, we want less folks driving under the influence of alcohol." Nobody disagrees with that. We don't want people being hurt. But what they don't realize is there's no way to measure 0.05, and we're putting we're creating new standards that we can't possibly enforce instead of just enforcing the ones that we already have.
So we did a show on this, John, and one of the things I will tell you is right now police officers have the discretion when they think somebody is impaired, even below 0.08, to arrest them. And all this bill does is make mandatory jail time, fill up our jails with people that are 0.05 that even aren't impaired. And so it's the police already have this discretion. So just that's one of the things that the police officer told us that was on the show.
I've heard the same thing. In fact, because even if they're under the current legal limit, if they're driving reckless, it's still against the law.
So right.
They can and do enforce if they're driving reckless at a lower limit. This is not a needed law. And I go right back to what you said right from the start is, why are we focused on creating new laws when we refuse to enforce the ones we already have?
Yeah.
Bad bills. Anything that is like sticking out to you that, we've got their budget. We're going to talk about their budget a little bit, but are there any other like really bad things happening that we need to be made aware of that our citizens need to understand?
The list is long. I'd highlight a few. There's a couple that I think could affect our community and the whole state that would bring climate change into the growth management planning process and also environmental justice into the growth management process. Both of these bills are just, they're ideologue-driven bills, based on one political viewpoint. They do nothing to improve either, environmental justice or climate change. What they do is add enormous cost and time, which is, of course, more cost, to building out houses. And we desperately need to create a situation where we can build more houses at lower cost, not make it more expensive and slower.
And did
those
that,
are the ones I'd highlight.
Was that tax ever implemented at the pump for the carbon tax?
Yes, it's in place. I'm glad you asked about that. That's a really interesting. So this is the cap and trade system, what they call cap and invest. We call cap and tax. It's right now, there's some disagreement, but it looks like it's about 25, 26 cents a gallon increase.
Crazy.
So far. They haven't had the first auction yet. The first auction is the end of this month, and then that will firm up and likely increase because the expectation is that that auction will go higher than anybody expected. Here's the interesting thing, even that bill they're having trouble executing on. So that bill exempts agriculture and maritime. It tells the Department of Ecology to go figure out a way to exempt them from paying that additional tax for the work they do. But ecology didn't do it. They just sat on their hands for 2 years and didn't do it. So now, we're going to see our food prices go up because they didn't manage to find a way to actually practically exempt them from this tax. So, when it comes to seafood or agriculturally grown produce, all the prices are going to go up because we've added more cost to our food system.
Hey, John, another thing that has been in the news a lot.
Change the subject kind of thing.
Well, kind of, but one of the things that's been on a lot of people's minds, we've had a lot of questions about, is the sex offender housing. This crazy thing that's been going on right now in Tenino with the I can't remember what level they are,
level
whatever
four.
The level four people being let out, put into this group housing situation, and they say there's more coming and that there's a possibility we're already one slated for Lewis County. Can you tell us about what's going on and what from your perspective?
And is
what
there
happened?
One coming to Lewis County?
Yeah.
I don't know any details about one coming to Lewis County. There was a court decision a few years ago that says, essentially, as they release folks from McNeil Island, and like it or not, when folks finish their sentence, there's a bunch of steps that go through us. They're obligated to move them by court order, that they have to go in equal measure around the state based on where they came from.
That's not just county of origin, but equal measure?
Yeah, so that's a little confusing. What originally the intention was county of origin, just like you say. It appears the way they're doing it is just saying, okay, you had, two from Lewis County, therefore you get two, but maybe not the two that came from Lewis County. It's a little, at least that's what we're seeing with the current situation in Thurston County. The ones they're placing there, they're saying is in measure to who came from Thurston County, but it's not the exact same people who came from Thurston County. So that's a little, which doesn't make sense, right? If you're really going to, if you think this is a good idea, and I'm not convinced it's a good idea, you'd at least think you'd put the folks that came here so they're closer to their, their family and whatever support network they may have to give them whatever chance they have of being successful in reentering society. But right now, the whole thing is on hold. There were very specific rules in statute on how the state was supposed to notify the public about this facility. They failed to do that. They tried to say they didn't need to. Now, I think Thurston County has stopped it in the near term based on some permitting issues, but they're still working on it. I have not heard of one specifically for Lewis County, but it wouldn't surprise me. There's a lot of push to put, and nobody wants this in their backyard, of course, because these folks can be dangerous, right? We have to deal with them. It's one of the unpleasant things of human society, but we ought to deal with them in a way that is transparent, open to the public, and most of all, safe for right. the neighborhoods. And here's the thing, is you look at the requirements, they don't need to be in a neighborhood. They could be, in an industrial area, in a commercial area where they have some separation.
Or McNeil Island.
Or McNeil Island.
Why is that? Why is that being shut down?
McNeil?
Yeah, why are they not just keeping him out there? I understand.
They got released.
No, I know, but they're still unfit. They have to be monitored for the rest of their life. They're not rehabilitative. Like, you can't rehabilitate these people. That's why, right?
I agree. I mean, I'm personally not a fan of the whole program, but the courts have said, rightly or wrongly, that they have to be moved, and they've been sentenced for a certain period of time. They've completed their sentence. They've gone through, there's a whole series of evaluations they have to go through, and said, hey, they can be released either conditionally into society. And both those mean more than what just the words. They mean just all the what kind of supervision has to happen. So we have only a couple of choices. One is we could potentially change the rules, but understand, under the current situation, they've been sentenced, they've served their time, they've met the requirements for release. We're essentially in a position where we have to deal with it somehow.
All right, Senator Braun, we only have a couple more minutes with you.
We got to get to something important.
So we want to talk about
Blake.
We want to talk about Blake, but also if we have time, we'd like to talk about this exacerbating housing situation and what we got going there. So what can you tell us about what's going on with the Blake decision?
So, first of all, just so folks know, the Blake decision was the state Supreme Court decision 2 years ago that essentially legalized hard drugs. So you can have hard drugs on your person. It's not against the law. And the D's put a law in place that essentially, for all intents and purposes, codified that. But put a deadline that it comes up this year that we have the opportunity to change it. So there's a lot of work. I'd say there's actually good news on the Blake. The bill that came out of committee in the Senate is not the one I like. It's got a ways to go, but the good news is that it's moving forward. It's debatable. We can amend it on the floor, and I think we'll find the votes on the floor to get it in better shape so that we make this, we step it up so we re-involve law enforcement, re-involve the prosecutor's offices, find a way to get folks who are struggling with substance abuse into the leverage to get them into treatment, keep them in treatment, and get them back on a better path. Right now, we just have lawlessness. So I would actually contrast this with, we talked earlier about the challenges we have with vehicular pursuit and where the D's are just blocking every effort to fix the problem. Blake actually is kind of how the process is supposed to work. We're not getting everything we want, but we're getting the chance to debate it, and we're making our case, and I think in the end, we will prevail. Because they're kind of allowing democracy to work where shoot issue, they're just standing in the way because they don't like the outcome democracy would bring them. I'll stop there if you have any further questions.
Housing.
Yeah, housing is going to be the next one. I mean, where are we at on efforts to help that front?
Yeah, because, I've talked about this in the past, that we've spent, $800 million on housing in the last four bienniums, and we're worse off today than we were. My understanding is they're creating a super fund for housing, so I assume it'll get even worse.
So that's the governor's proposal to ask the voters to approve $4 billion outside the debt limit. I don't think that bill is going to go anywhere. Even the Democratic majorities understand that that's a super mortgage on things we aren't doing well to begin with. I mean, the bottom line is, there may be an important place for the state to invest in affordable housing, but we can't come close to fixing the problem with state investment. I mean, they're talking about we need a million more homes by 2044. If you did, all the governor's proposal of $4 billion, you'd end up with about another 10,000 homes.
A million? Where do they come up with a million?
This is a study they refer to. But the bigger point is, you know, with outrageous investment, unprecedented investment from the state, which is still solve only a tiny, tiny fraction of the problem. This is not how you get there. You have to go get there by changing the environment, by making it more affordable for builders, private builders, to build, by providing more access to land to build, by making the permitting process better. And I think on those fronts, we're making some progress. We have some bills that are, I think, going to allow for more flexibility to grow up and out within communities, and also improve the permitting process, the CEPA process in particular, that will be helpful. The risk is, you know, we could do all this work and make the environment a little bit better for builders and then turn around and change, I mentioned earlier, the two growth management bills.
Right.
You know, we do those and we undo all the good we did. The other one that's out there, I didn't mention, there's a rent control bill that, you know, some folks will think that sounds good on the surface, but what that will do is absolutely turn off the spigot on capital investment in our state to build more housing. It'll stop all new building when it comes to rental properties in our state if that passes. So we have to, there's some opportunity here, some good bills, some with bipartisan support that could go all the way. But if we do all that and we do some of these bad bills, we'll just be, you know, one step forward, two steps back is what I would say is happening.
But they don't want private investment in the rental market. They want them all to leave like they did health insurance. I mean, they want government housing, so people have to vote for them, yeah?
Well, this may be what they want, but we know absolutely that won't get them the housing they need. That would all just drive up scarcity. It'll drive up, you know, the cost of housing one way or the other. And frankly, it'll continue to contribute to this outrageous homelessness issue that we have across our state, and one that is unique in the United States. We are much worse than every other state in the country because continued failed policies by the Democratic majority.
Well, we do impact fees. We're doing climate fees. We have permit fees. Everything that we do, you know, and you have these guys that want to put sprinklers in all new construction. Everything they do adds to the price of construction housing. It frustrates me to no end.
It really does.
Former Speaker Representative Chop has another bill to add another $100 to the document recording fee, which just is one more cut on the affordability of housing and rental, any kind of building.
Yeah, well, and then the hardest part for me on the state thing is, you don't have to comment on this because I know you have colleagues that you have to work with, but the housing scam of how they pass this housing money through four or five organizations before it actually gets down and everybody takes 10%, that's very frustrating to me.
You know, the system doesn't work. And this is the other part that they don't say is they invest in affordable housing. You know, everybody's mind is, hey, we're going to go build some more affordable dwellings for people to live in. What really happens much of the time is they just go out and they buy existing housing, turn it into affordable housing. They don't end up with a single new house on the market. It's just more government-owned housing or government-subsidized housing, and doesn't affect the price of folks who want to go buy or rent a house.
You're exactly right. And John, it goes along. I mean, we're talking about housing, all this stuff. And the biggest part of this is there's this homelessness issue. Like you've said, we are worse than so many other areas because of the failed policies. What is there anything that looks like it might come out of the session this year that will help get us to a better place on that?
You know, I'm not very optimistic on this, candidly. I mean, there is now some recognition. This you have to understand, this homelessness issue in Washington has been almost entirely, it's not to say we didn't always have some level of homelessness, but the new enormous growth has been entirely on Governor Inslee's watch. He's not interested now. They say, well, this is all about creating more housing.
Yeah.
That's only a small part of it, but they don't want to actually put policies in place to create more housing, and it's only a fraction of the problem. You have to, you know, a lot of this homelessness is driven by mental health issues. We got much work to do there, by substance abuse issues, and of course those are combined and they add on each other. Underscoring all of this is, even if you provide all the services necessary, even if you provide all the housing necessary, which is a very, very hard thing to do, unless you have, you know, the rule and order, the structure, the enforcement of rules to make it, you know, actually execute it, you can't be successful. And that's where they fundamentally fail to recognize that you have to have a structure. You have to enforce rules. If you're going to get folks off the street into more suitable housing, get them the treatment they need, you have to have rules. And they just can't get their minds around that. They think that anything like that must be wrong, and they're entirely wrong on it.
Senator, we are out of time, believe it or not. That show went super fast.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for fighting the fight for us in Olympia. We are so glad that we have somebody from Lewis County in leadership. You are doing an amazing job.